Chapter 13. The Shooting. In the late evening, I ate the last of my food and then started walking again. I soon found myself in an enormous open area, which I knew from my previous visit to Dorset. I had no idea from which direction I had come to it, and I was totally lost. I walked around until I saw the lights of a small town in a valley far below me. This helped me to understand where I was, and I began to go down to the valley. While I was moving carefully in the direction of my burrow, stopping sometimes to hide in small lanes and behind farmhouses, I began to think about the sidecar that had originally been with the tandem. At the time, I had thrown it into a small muddy stream, and now I wanted to know if it had been moved. If the police had found it and taken it from the stream for identification, they might not believe the evidence of the cottages, and they might be looking for me in this area. After walking for some time, I found myself in familiar territory. I knew that the stream was not far away. It was well hidden by branches from the trees growing on either side, and I was reasonably sure that there was little chance that anyone would have discovered the sidecar there. I stepped into the ice-cold water and started to walk downstream. At first, I didn't see the sidecar where I had expected to find it. I didn't worry yet, but continued walking down the stream until, at last, I saw it. I was so happy to find it that I didn't hesitate to go near it. I was examining the sidecar when a voice called my name very quietly. I was so surprised and fascinated that for a second I couldn't move. A thin ray of light shone on my face, and then I heard the noise of a gun, and I felt something hit my chest. I fell backwards across the sidecar with my head half under the water. I've got no memory of falling, only of the light and the loud explosion. I must have been unconscious for a few seconds. When I regained consciousness, I heard a car come up the road and I heard someone get out. I heard two men talking and moving towards the stream. I suppose that they wanted to get my body. I crawled through the grass and went back to the lane as quickly as I could. I was frightened and shocked, and I felt a pain whenever I moved my right arm. I was also careless about leaving a trail. Once I was safely back in my burrow, I lay down to recover. Then I got up, lit a candle, and examined myself carefully. The bullet had hit the flask of whiskey in my top inside pocket. That bottle had saved my life. The bullet had gone through my jacket and was now in my right shoulder. It was so near the surface that I could take it out with my fingers. My skin was marked and broken right across my chest, and I felt as if I had been hit by a railway engine. But I wasn't seriously hurt. I understood why the man who had shot me had not even bothered to examine me. By the light of his torch, he had seen the bullet hit me and had watched the whiskey spread across my jacket. In that light, he couldn't see that the stain wasn't really blood, so he had assumed that the bullet had hit me in the heart and that I was dead. This person had clearly had experience of hunting animals. He had got into my mind. He knew that sooner or later I would return to see if the sidecar was still there, and quietly calling my name to make me turn my head was perfect. He obviously understood who I was and what sort of man I was, so it was clear to him that I had left false trails. He had also guessed that I would have chosen to hide the sidecar in water. He had seen that I had used water before for hiding or escaping. He would have found the trail that I had left when I ran home in fear after being shot, and now it wouldn't be difficult for him to find my hiding place in the lane. What I had to do now was to change my whole way of living. Instead of keeping the lane closed, I had to open it completely, while I myself lived underground. I had to make it look as if no one had ever lived in the lane. I started on the work immediately. It had begun to rain hard, and I welcomed the rain because it would help me to wash away all signs of myself. It would also make it more difficult for the man who had shot me to follow me. There was a hedge on each side of the lane. The one on the left side was very thick and wide, but the one on the right was rather thin and had many openings in it. I made it much thicker using a lot of branches and loose wood that I found. Then I covered all my tracks in the lane as well as I could. The rain helped to hide any signs that I had lived there. When I had finished, I went back into my burrow, knowing that the rain would wash out my footprints. I hadn't been able to make the place look completely deserted, and the steps which I had cut into the tree were still visible. However, I hoped that the man who had shot me, if he ever found this place, would believe that I had left it or that I had died of my wound. Once I was back in the burrow, the only possible exit was through the chimney. It was wide enough for me to crawl through, except for the last part, which I still had to dig out. I worked on it that afternoon, but it was very painful because my shoulder was hurting badly. The opening of the chimney above the ground was well hidden under the blackberry bush, and I could use the roots of the plants growing into the chimney as a kind of ladder to climb out. The only problem was that I now had an enormous quantity of wet earth in the burrow and no way of removing it. In spite of all the pain and difficulties, it seems to me now that I was happy during those hours of work. Finally, I had something to do, a definite task, which gave me a sense of purpose. Now, there was nothing for me to do but to sit and wait.